Qué negras son las horas sin estar a tu lado. Las noches son eternas y estoy lejos de ti. Quisiera ser el viento y atravesar los mares y olvidar los pesares que sufro yo por ti.
Hi, this is Daniel Garber at the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Simone Rapisardo Casanova made a film in a fishing village in Cuba. It's unusual both as an art film and as a record of a village wiped out by a hurricane. And his new work, The Strawberry Tree, is playing at the Images Festival's 25th season. And he's here with me in the studio. Hi, Simone.
Hi, Daniel.
So how did you end up making this film?
Well, it was a very ambitious project. I started working on it several years before. I have a fascination with utopias, and my previous film was dealing with the utopia of immigrants coming to North America, and this one, the ambition was to try to have to address three utopias at the same time, and so the only place where I found that would have been possible was this fishing village in Cuba, and the three utopias are communism, and the other one, the second one, is the pre-colonial Cuba, pre-colonial North America. In fact, this village is just next to the site where Columbus first set anchor in 1492, discovering the New World, and the third utopia being the documentary genre as a mirror of reality and of the truth. So I wanted to investigate all these three utopias without really giving any answer. I don't really like answers. I prefer questions. And I wanted to, find out for myself. I was really curious about that.
Well, with the ideas, you say the utopia of the documentary method, a lot of Canadian documentary makers would say in Canada, you have a camera there, pretty soon it becomes invisible because cameras are ubiquitous here. Mm. So the subjects stop noticing the camera. But in Cuba, which is not as used to cameras, how did you find the subjects would react?
I really don't like this notion of the camera being invisible. Filmmakers, they go to a great extent to try to make the camera invisible, but it is never. In a way, subjects are always performing, and it really changes the reality around it. To give an example, I think a very good percentage of the takes in my film, had it been a normal documentary, would have ended in a trash can, because the subjects are addressing the camera and they're making the spectator aware that they're watching a film. But because I had the freedom of not having producing this film myself, not having to respond to anyone, and I knew I was making an experimental film, so I was able to keep all these takes, and I think they add a layer that I think it was really important for me to have in my work.
Well, the third or fourth utopia that you don't mention is that of art and creation. And I think in a lot of art movies, they always try to give the image of it being dispassionate and cold and formal and structured. But as you say, the subjects in your movie sort of break that and make fun of you, talk about you, write to the camera, things like that. But you chose to keep them in. Why?
For me, it was important to share with the spectator the doubts that I have, all the daily questioning that I have about how a film can be close to reality, how this documentary I'm watching can be close to reality. So I wanted to bring them in this personal adventure. And so I want them to keep being aware that they were watching a movie. And in a way, I in this particular case, I felt also it was really, it would have been insincere to just remove all this. Like, it was so much a part of my experience being in this village, all this, while I was shooting this film, having all, you know, them talking to me all the time and making fun of me. And so I thought my goal also was to see how close could I get to the truth, to reality. And part of the truth and the reality in that moment was me being there with the camera. And I didn't want to hide that. I thought that would have kind of made my film more artificial. And
and yet the format, or the form you choose, is an unmoving camera set up at a very low level. Why do you have the camera on the ground or near the ground, looking up always?
Well, there are a few reasons. One is that it's they in this village they don't have tables, and all activity like it's like the entire surface of the village is their table, and by looking at it you will understand what I mean. All activities happen on the floor. Actually, yeah, they have a couple of tables, but they never use them. Because of these reasons, because there is really a lot of most of animals that are really an integral part of the life of the villages, they are not that tall. So, but also I felt really small, and I wanted to convey that to the spectators, as small as a Westerner bringing a Westerner gaze toward the others, and usually Westerner, we go to a foreign country like feeling big, and I didn't really want to do that, and I felt small. And these people, they were really smart, as you can see in the film. They were very educated. Some of them had university degrees. They really understood my enterprise, what I wanted to do with my ethnographic film. And in fact, they were making fun of it. You know, when they say we lost all our teepees and the igloos.
Right.
Yeah.
How much time did you spend there shooting this, the first part?
I spent 1 month. 1 month.
And when you came back, well, in between when you came back, there was a hurricane. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so like this was supposed to be more of a long-term project. My idea was to go back several years in a row and document the changes in this community, because I knew that eventually it would have disappeared. I wasn't expecting it to disappear 3 weeks after I had left the village. So, but these places, they disappear for various reasons all over the world. So I really want to document that. And so on the year after, the next trip, I couldn't shoot the village anymore. There was no village left. So I shoot some interviews with the villager, and one of them ended up in the film as an opening scene.
Oh, right. So the bookend or the opening scene of the film was post-hurricane.
Yeah, just 1 year after, yeah. Yeah.
And when you say wiped out, do you mean literally washed away?
Yeah. Yeah, they are quite used there to hurricanes in the Caribbean, but they are really not afraid of them, but they are evacuated off very often because of that. But this time it really passed right through the village, so nothing was left, nothing at all. Luckily, yeah, they were evacuated, as I said, the day before, and so nobody died, but still, yeah, the village was gone completely.
And the title is The Strawberry Tree. Is there a strawberry tree in the movie? What is a strawberry tree? What's meant by
well,
that?
Well, yeah, there is a tree in Cuba that's called the strawberry tree. And as you can imagine, there are no strawberries growing on it, right? But still, there are some red fruits that from afar, from a distance, they resemble strawberries. But when you get close, you understand they're really not. They are edible, but they are really not as good as strawberries. Still, this tree is called the strawberry tree. So I really liked the fact that a tree has this name, even if, you know, the people are still calling it the strawberry tree, even if they know perfectly well that it cannot. It doesn't have strawberries, and so I was fascinated by in a way it was an utopia in a form of a tree. And the funny thing is also then I realized that there are similar trees all over the world. There is one on the Pacific coast of the US. It's a totally different tree, but still called the strawberry tree. There is one in the Atlantic coast of Europe, and again a different tree, and but still called with the same name. There is one in China. I wouldn't be able to pronounce the name. Totally different tree, still called the strawberry tree. So it's really the nature of human beings. So if you want, maybe there is a fifth utopia, right? The utopia of a tree that can bear strawberries and
thanks, Simone. Yeah. Simone Rapisardo Casanova's new film, The Strawberry Tree, a beautiful film, is playing on the 20th at Jackman Hall at the Images Festival in Toronto. Thanks, Simone.
Thank you.
And be here to support CIUT on its membership drive on right now. This is Daniel Garber, the Movies, each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.